Welcome back. It's a Tuesday, the 19th day of March, 2019. I'm your host, Mark Hall. And yesterday, folks, I spent most of the day talking about literally the sleaze factor. Elements on so many fronts that show just how far gone not only the news is, from corruption to mass murder, but the coverage of the news from the waste stream lying fake news outlets. The big story as far as the waste stream is concerned remains the, well, literally stinky probable false flag. No, we may never see the evidence, but that certainly doesn't prevent us from at least thinking about it, although we may not be allowed to ever talk about it. From the latest mecca and poster child for the failure of gun control, New Zealand, where now Big Brother there wants to make possession of that video absolutely verboten. And we'll come back to the implications of that in some detail in a few minutes, but basically, censorship not only marches on, it steamrolls anything in its way. Let's start, though, with this story from the Gateway Pundit and, of course, Twitter, where Cassandra Fairbanks writes that Twitter has now admitted that it shadow banned an accurate tweet about Hillary Clinton. No, not you-know-who, working with Russia, Russia, Russia. And in this case, it's Sean Davis, co-founder of the website The Federalist, that had tweeted a screenshot of former disgraced FBI attorney Lisa Page and her congressional testimony, in which she discussed the urgency within the federal bunglers of investigation, SIC, to find evidence of someone within the Trump campaign, anyone it would seem, working with Russia, 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 to obtain damaging information about Clinton. Along with the screenshot, Davis wrote that, quote, this particular passage from Lisa Page's testimony about the FBI's Trump investigation is interesting, given that we now know for a fact that a foreign national working on behalf of Hillary's campaign was working with the Russians to obtain damaging information about Trump. And then he cites Page's congressional testimony itself, describing the urgency and the, quote, speed and the sensitivity that we needed to operate under. Unquote. Oh, and the secrecy, too. But shortly after the post, Davis tweeted screenshots of his tweet not appearing on the feeds of a whole lot of other people, even though it remained visible to him. Ain't that clever, folks? So he asked if Twitter was experimenting with shadow bans by deleting tweets so others can't see them, but keeping them visible so you'll think they might while you're logged in. And here's the kicker, folks. Nearly a week later, Davis posted an update saying that Twitter had confirmed to him that they did indeed shadow ban his tweet in order to, are you ready for this? Keep people safe, unquote. Don't worry your pretty little heads about it, because it might upset you to know what Big Boy is doing while your ignorance is made manifest, wrote Davis later. Twitter gave me no notice or explanation when it shadow banned one of my tweets about Russian interference in our elections. But what's worse is how Twitter apparently gave its users the fraudulent impression that their tweets, which Twitter secretly bans, are still public. And as Zero Hedge, which also tends to get banned a lot lately, summed up the situation. In short, Twitter did not want the public to consider the irony of Hillary Clinton's campaign paying for a foreign national to collude with Russians against Donald Trump, while the FBI scrambled to prove the Trump campaign did. And, oh, guess what, folks? This is kind of related. Congressman Devin Nunes, R. California, has now filed a $250 million lawsuit himself against Twitter on Monday for shadow banning conservatives in order to, well, ain't this ironic? Influence the U.S. elections. But wait, aren't they a private company? Well, I guess you could say so is Diebold and other vote counters. What's to prevent any of them from getting together and deciding that private companies all, they can rig the elections and put in there whoever they want? Answer? Looks like nothing, and they already have. And they might just have managed to get away with it during the congressional midterms, at least. And when it comes to that Devin Nunes lawsuit against Twitter, Fox News reported that the California rep filed that major $250 million lawsuit seeking punitive and compensatory damages against Twitter and a handful of its users on Monday, accusing the socialist media site of shadow banning conservatives, including himself, in order to influence the 2018 elections, and systematically censoring opposing viewpoints and totally ignoring lawful complaints of repeated abusive behavior. Gee, do you think? In the lawsuit obtained by Fox on Monday, filed in a Virginia state court, Nunes' Twitter was guilty of, quote, knowingly hosting and monetizing content that is clearly abusive, hateful, and defamatory, providing both a voice and financial incentive to the defamers, and thereby facilitating defamation on its platform. And the lawsuit alleges not only the defamation, conspiracy, and negligence, and seeks not only damages, but also an injunction compelling Twitter to turn over the identities behind the numerous accounts he says have harassed and defamed him. Commenting on the lawsuit, Jim Hoft at the Gateway Pundit notes that a 2018 study by the leftist website, Vice News, even found that Twitter is censoring top pro-Trump lawmakers, including targeting Matt Gaetz, Devin Nunes himself, Mark Meadows, Jim Jordan, and John Ratcliffe with the same shadow banning technique. Furthermore, they're also censoring prominent pro-Trump accounts, including Mike Cernovich, Jack Posobiec, Paul Joseph Watson, TGP's own Jim Hoft, and Cassandra Fairbanks, among several other TGP contributors, and of course Laura Loomer, who's been detweeted completely and put into the Twitter memory hole. Which brings me to a series of stories I alluded to up front concerning the memory hole, and the now familiar phenomenon we've seen happen time after time after time when it comes to really stench-filled false flags. Whether we're talking about gun-free killing zones in Florida, California, Las Vegas, or now New Zealand. So we'll start there, under the headline Memory Hole New Zealand, with a piece from Aaron Kessel at the Activist Post that says the official narrative being pushed in the waste stream media on the latest tragic shootings in a gun-free killing zone at two crowded mosques in New Zealand is that 28-year-old Brenton Tarrant murdered 50 people, injuring scores of others, at the time of this report, all by his lone gunman self. But, and how many times have we seen this, there are more questions than answers regarding the attack. For instance, New Zealand authorities reported after the incident that four suspects were taken into custody, three men and a woman, and they added that they had found and neutralized several IEDs, and that's improvised explosive devices, if you're not up on your Hollywood talk, on the vehicle stopped during the arrest. MSN even wrote that the IEDs were attached to the attacker's vehicle. That was cited by the Associated Press at the top of the article. And CNN reported that New Zealand Police Commissioner Mike Bush said in a press conference that the vehicles authorities had stopped did have those IEDs strapped to them. Quote, there were a number of IEDs attached to vehicles that we stopped, unquote, said Bush. Meaning, notes Kessel, that people arrested weren't just arrested for no reason, and they may have been involved, despite the mum press failing to ask the obvious important questions. And that, too, we're getting used to. Furthermore, and how many times have we seen this? You know, I've been saying that a lot when it comes to these kind of false flaggy-looking gun-free killing zone mass murders, haven't I? Early reports by the mainstream press of the event suggests there were multiple shooters from witnesses and police. He quotes a couple of sources, including the Spectator first, saying that New Zealand police reported the possibility of three active shooters in those Christchurch mosque attacks, while Ryan Saavedra quoted the New Zealand Herald reporting that the shooting at the second mosque was stopped by an armed Muslim who chased shooters and fired two shots at them as they sped off. Signifying one of two things, maybe more, that either this was a false flag attack, ding, 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 or that there were more than one persons involved in this horrific act, and that seems likely as well, and that the New Zealand government has elected, or was pressured, to declare the attack as the work of the stereotypical lone gunman. In any case, if the obvious, repetitively boring pattern is any guide, and it sure has been up until now, and this doesn't look like an exception, expect a cover-up. We've seen that taking place already, with information being memory-holed, as Activist Post contributor Vin Armani has already tweeted, while he still can. Quote, four people were arrested after this NZ mosque massacre. Watch how the other three disappear into the memory hole. That's because they were almost certainly the state intelligence operatives who organized the shooting and convinced the low-IQ shooter to do it. Watch, he concluded, and then barely a few hours later had to add, at 8 o'clock on 15 March 2019, that was fast, as it came to pass. And there are some other interesting anomalies, too, like Terrence's odd travel history. In the years before the lone gunman allegedly wrote his manifesto and carried out his mission, the Australian citizen claimed to have traveled abroad, visiting the Balkans, Western Europe, Pakistan, Turkey, Iceland, Poland, New Zealand, Argentina, Ukraine, and even North Korea. And let's not forget, New Zealand doesn't even come close to having a Second Amendment. And the Australian immigrant shooter would have found very restrictive laws there. Civilians, say a number of stories, aren't allowed to possess handguns, military-style semi-automatic weapons, or fully automatic weapons without a permit and a firearm license. So yeah, how did this person or persons get all the weapons and ammo, and what's the excuse? More importantly, though, and more to the point, what else is being covered up? Because there's a whole lot of attention being devoted to the 10 years in prison that New Zealand is now threatening for merely possessing the mosque shooting video. But when it comes to censorship, that's just the beginning. Not only are the peons being told that if they knowingly possess a copy of the New Zealand mosque shooting video, they face up to 10 years in prison. If they share it, it's 14 years, and corporations, including web hosts, face an additional $200,000 New Zealand fine under the same law. And as Zero Hedge puts it, copies of Terrence's livestream, along with his lengthy manifesto, began to circulate rapidly on various file hosting sites following the attack, which, as they noted Friday, were quickly scrubbed from the Waystream platforms, including the usual suspects to Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and Scribd. YouTube's gone so far as to intentionally disable search filters so that people can't even find the Christchurch shooting materials, including footage of the suspected multiple shooters, there's the rub, as well as the arrest of Tarrant and the other suspects. Here's the warning from one of the local propaganda outlets, the Wellington Live, noting, New Zealand police would like to remind the public that it is an offense to share an objectionable publication, yada, yada, yada. If you see this video, report it immediately. Do not download it. Do not share it. If you are found to have a copy of the video or to have shared it, you face fines and potential imprisonment. Unquote. You know what, folks? If Big Brother had been able to get away with that here, a whole lot of us would have had a lot more difficulty understanding what really happened at the Pentagon and Twin Towers on 9/11. And the Oklahoma Murrah bombing was before cell phones, so that wasn't yet an issue. The FBI did come in and abscond with all of the video of John Doe's number 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 that you've never even heard about since. And I saw firsthand what happened to all the photographic evidence that General Ben Parton put together the day after that shooting. So it's pretty obvious that Big Brother New Zealand is getting proactive here, just like the FBI did, for example, in Las Vegas. But wait, there's more. Along with the censorship of online materials and investigation of content-sharing platforms such as BitChute and 8chan, where the shooter posted a link to the live stream of his attack, social discussion service Dissenter has been blocked in New Zealand. Evidently, so was Zero Hedge, at least for a while. I'm not sure if it still is or not. And that's an alternative to Twitter, created by the people who built Gab AI, and have thus been under attack for quite a while themselves. On Saturday, says this story, Gab's official accounts both reported that New Zealand's ISPs have banned Dissenter.com until it is, quote, censorship compliant. And meanwhile, popular right-wing commentator Milo Yiannopoulos has also been banned from Australia in the wake of the New Zealand shootings after he said on to Facebook that attacks like Christchurch happen because, quote, the establishment panders to and mollycoddles extremist leftism and barbaric alien religious cultures, unquote. Achtung, that too is verboten to say. Unless perhaps you wear a burqa on the floor of Congress, in which case you can get away with darn near anything. Which brings me to the obvious question, why? Why are Big Brother and its ministries of truth trying to censor video footage of the New Zealand massacre? Maybe the answer is obvious, and certainly more than a few commentators have already weighed in on that aspect, from David Knight to Ethan Huff, J.D. Hayes, and Mike Adams at Natural News. David Knight, for his part, harkens all the way back to the Zapruder film of the JFK assassination. I guess the good news for Big Brother's murderers and cover-up artists was that there was just that one bit of motion picture evidence to control and explain away. Still, the magic bullet did get a bit preposterous after a few decades. Obviously, it's better to just slap a lid on all the evidence right up front. And here Ethan Huff quotes CNN Business, as relayed by Zero Hedge, to say, Big Tech is currently engaged in a, quote, struggle to deal with the New Zealand shooting video. And what this language actually means is that the major media platforms don't really want people to see the video in question and are actively trying to suppress the truth about what really took place behind all the media propaganda. as Zero Hedge put it, deal with is code for censor on demand by governments and activist organizations who oppose public access to information that hasn't first been thoroughly vetted for conformity to their preferred narrative. And at least for the time being, Natural News does link a bit of the graphic video footage, which they were able to archive on Brighteon servers to prevent it from being scrubbed. And in it, you'll notice they say that the first-person shooter angle really more closely resembles a video game as opposed to a real-life shooting. In one scene, you can even see bodies of the victims piled up before the shooter even fires his weapon. And perhaps they suggest this is the reason why the waste-stream media is trying to censor the footage, because it blows some major holes in that official narrative. Just imagine, folks, the horror of YouTube being populated with videos showing major discrepancies in the so-called live shooting video. Well, I'm sure Big Brother rests easy knowing Google isn't about to allow that to happen. And as many people are now realizing, the official narrative is again being used to target free speech. In this case, people who might try to criticize mass Islamic migration to countries like New Zealand and Australia. And they quote tweet after tweet here, until they get scrubbed, saying, nobody can now in any way criticize Islam in Australia or New Zealand because this horrific attack has given true victim status to Muslims. Others say things like the socialist mob lynchings of anybody who previously spoke about concerns over Islam or mass migration has begun. There's an outpouring of hate against anyone who raises a problem with the mass migrations at all. That view is now radioactive and cannot be held in public. And, of course, you're not allowed to talk about anything that might be bogus in the latest false flag, either. Oh, and for those who might still be concerned or confused about the use of the term false flag to describe these things we keep seeing over and over and over again, with the obvious agendas, it doesn't mean that real people don't really die, or that there aren't really evil people more than willing to sacrifice them to accomplish their evil goals. What it does mean is that the motivations are not necessarily what we're being told, and that really nasty people, in government and out, might not necessarily be who they pretend to be, and certainly have a whole different agenda than the peons are being allowed to know about. As another piece by J.D. Hayes at Natural News summarized it, the latest New Zealand false flag is being used by governments, plural, to create an internet police state. He notes that New Zealand, along with the United States, Canada, the UK, and Australia, are part of the Five Eyes Western Intelligence Network that's been used for decades now to circumvent national laws and constitutions having to do with prohibitions against unlawful surveillance, eavesdropping, wiretapping, we don't need no stinking warrants, all those kind of things. It works like this. You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. I can't tap British phones, but hey, you can, and we can swap the info, right? Aren't we clever? And finally, folks, your host has used the term beta test to describe aspects of things like this for quite a while. Big Brother always wants to know how effective their control measures are, how they can keep a lid on certain information, what they can get away with and what they can't. We're seeing all of that play out right here, front and center, in the latest gun and population control exercise, until they get it perfected and rolled out, at which point we'll never see anything more at all. This next story is perhaps one of the biggest, or at least it should be, in modern post-constitutional history. And it's related to so much that's been going on for quite some time and been covered up so effectively, including the latest testimony, even though it took months to finally come out, in part, from the likes of Lisa Page and Peter Strzok. And here's what should be the banner headline on every newspaper in the entire United States. And it would be, by the way, if it had to do with a Republican or even a Rhino. And yeah, I'll admit it, to some extent we knew this all along, but it's still kind of nice to see it finally coming out, even if the waste stream continues to ignore it. Bombshell testimony released this week revealed that Hillary Clinton received what amounts to a secret pre-pardon to avoid the possibility that she could be charged under the Espionage Act for her gross negligence in the mishandling and dissemination of classified top secret and above government national security material. According to the newly disclosed testimony of former FBI official Lisa Page, the Obama Just Us Department instructed the FBI not to pursue charges against Clinton. Here's what Representative John Ratcliffe tweeted last week about his interaction with the so far unindicted criminal Page. Quote, Lisa Page confirmed to me under oath that the FBI was ordered by the Obama DOJ not to consider charging Hillary Clinton for gross negligence in the handling of classified information. The transcripts reveal the exact question that he asked. You're making it sound, he said, like it was the department that told you you're not going to charge gross negligence because we're the prosecutors and we're telling you we're not going to. To which Page responded, that is correct. Page further said in her testimony that the FBI held, quote, multiple conversations with the Obama Department of Justice about charging Clinton with gross negligence, but the Bureau was told that such a charge would not be brought forward. A little more background here is certainly appropriate, since the waste stream certainly doesn't want to talk about any of this. The Attorney General, sick at the time, was Loretta Lynch Mob, who held that infamous secret tarmac meeting with Bill Clinton just prior to the FBI recommending against charging Hillary. And in media appearances following the infamous meeting, Lynch, without disclosing her involvement in the case and seemingly already knowing the outcome of the so-called investigation, said she would, quote, accept the recommendations of the FBI. Arguably, we now know, because they'd all accepted somebody else's recommendations going in.
I'm going to make them an offer he can't refuse.
Shortly thereafter, disgraced, fired, but hardly chastened former FBI director, Hormeister himself, James Comey, would hold a press conference just a few months prior to the 2016 election in which he infamously stated that, quote, no reasonable prosecutor would dare bring, I'm sorry, he didn't put the word dare in there, but he should have. No reasonable prosecutor who wanted to live would even think about bringing a case against Clinton. And now we know the rest of the story. An early Comey draft document of the speech accused Clinton of gross negligence, but that's, of course, a term of art implying that there ought to be an indictment, which they weren't about to do. So according to John Solomon of the Hill, that term was changed to extremely careless. We've talked about the chart and all of the people involved in that particular aspect of the cover-up, and that information, too, was a long time coming. Because gross negligence in handling classified information should be a federal crime, and indeed would be if you were a low-level midshipman or somebody on board a submarine or any grunt anywhere in the U.S. military that ought to know better, much less Secretary of State. For her part, Strzok paramour Lisa Page was one of the criminals involved in the sequence of texts that outlined the insurance policy against the potential of the election rigging not coming off as planned and Donald Trump actually being able to sit in the Oval Office. You can bet there was concern that heads might roll, unless they managed to do something about it. After which, both Strzok and Page worked on the Robert Mueller Russia witch hunt, which is yet to find any actual evidence of collusion with Russia, well, outside of Camp Hillary. But Mueller was forced by the embarrassment of having all of this information come out concerning Strzok and Page to unload the dynamic dastardly duo. And the cover-up's been a continuing battle ever since, while the legacy media, as this story puts it, have been remarkably silent on all the colossal revelations, and it appears that almost no one in the waste stream has bothered to follow up on questions about the latest Page testimony. A verified search, says the Conservative Review, for Clinton Espionage Act on Twitter reveals precisely one legacy media reporter, Aaron Blake of the WAPO, who decided to highlight the remarkable testimony from Page. But no one has asked the key questions about why Obama and his deputies have decided that Hillary Clinton was essentially above the law. So we'll close with one final story from another front in the continuing war. From Breitbart and DHS Secretary Kirsten Nelson, border security is, quote, in a near system-wide meltdown. It's collapsing because the cartels and migrants are exploiting Congress's refusal to close loopholes through the border, said the Homeland Secretary on Monday morning. You've heard some of the numbers of late. Last month, we apprehended more than 75,000 people at the southern border. And this month, she said, we're on track to interdict nearly 100,000 wannabe migrants. And because of outdated laws, misguided court decisions, and a massive backlog of cases, we're usually forced to release these groups into the United States, where we have virtually no hope of removing them in the future, even though the vast majority don't qualify for asylum. And the urgent bottom line, she said, is the system is breaking. And that's a pretty good general summary, too. May Yahuwah bless you and yours.